Well, the other night, Christine and I were watching television and Joanna Lumley was on. Why is this so hard to push? What was that? I'm glad I was behind the screen. And she was in Vienna and talking about Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which is a beautiful piece of work. I like a bit of classical. I like a bit of ABBA. I like a bit of everything. But the interesting story, I didn't know about the story. Rick would know all about the story. Where's Rick? He was here a minute ago. Oh, yeah. Is it the final piece, the Ode to Joy, you know, da 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 da, just beautiful piece. But to get to there, you've got to go through chaos. Because the story of the symphony is that the people are searching for peace or searching for life or something. And on the way to the conclusion, which is the Ode to Joy, they had to go by seven chaotic creatures. I never knew that. And I thought, yes, that is such a familiar theme, both in the world and in the Bible, and I will show some of that this morning. Probably every fictional book that's ever been written is about moving from a problem to a solution, chaos to order. And so that's my theme. Now, this is the third in a series of three, or maybe four, if I don't know. I haven't worked anything else out yet. Started off with the Gospels, the messy Gospels, I called them. And I'm trying to give people who are not so familiar with the Bible some pointers on how to unravel it. It's a big book, 66 books in fact, but looking around at you lot, you're probably all so deeply embedded in the Bible that you don't need this at all. Anyway, you're going to get it whether you need it or want it or not, all right? But I was thinking of others who are not so familiar with the Bible when I'm putting these talks together. But even the hardened of us biblical scholars can learn a little bit or two. So the first one was the Gospels. Then the second one was the Psalms, the Palace of the Psalms, which was recent, and now this one. From chaos to order. Well, I'm going to give you some examples, and then later on, because I've got the whiteboard out, I'm going to ask for some examples that you think of from the scriptures. And I'll have a minion up here who'll do some writing. I don't know who yet, but whoever is a willing minion. And we'll get some feedback, okay, because there's a whole lot of stuff that can be said here, but I just want to sort of introduce it. So let's start with the beginning. In the beginning, when God created the universe, the earth was formless and desolate. The raging ocean that covered everything was engulfed in total darkness, and the Spirit of God was moving over the water. Now, unfortunately, this chapter, a passage of scripture, has been fought over with tooth and nail for a long, long time. And yet it's about as simple as falling off a log, really. Because it's got very little to do with creation and a lot to do with order. You see, to start with, it's already been created. It says so. Created the universe. The earth was formless. The earth was there. And the ocean was there. But it was desolate and engulfed in darkness and so on. In other words, there was chaos. Now, I don't want to equate Genesis with the stories of the ancient Near East. They're all very similar, all stating the fact that with all their creation myths, there was chaos and they wanted order. This is the same here. And so God said, okay, this is what Genesis is all about. God commanded, let there be light. And light appeared. And he named the light day and he named the darkness night. And basically, he set up time. Now, without time, it was total chaos. If you destroyed all the clocks in the world and destroyed time as a thing, it would be chaos. And that's exactly what it was in the beginning. But God started to order chaos. And we'll go on. I mean, we won't go on, but we could go on. And I'm just making a point right at the very beginning of the Bible. From chaos to order. You will find it in Genesis 1 and you'll find it in Revelation 21. So it's a very important theme. Now, you could take all sorts of themes in the Bible. You could take the theme of redemption, of salvation. Terribly important, and that's all there. And you could take the theme of what the angel said at the birth of Christ, peace on earth, goodwill to all men. And that's there in the Bible. You could take the words of Paul, taking a New Testament passage now, where he says, for through the Messiah, God was reconciling the world to himself by not counting their sins against them. And you would be saying the same thing, order out of chaos. And if you chose to punch the devil in the nose, you'd be saying the same thing. There is evil presence and evil influence. And God establishes order out of chaos eventually. So I like this theme. When I first came across it, and it's not my originality, obviously, because we all live on the shoulders of others, I thought, yes, that makes all the sense in the world. When I ranged my mind across the Bible, and everything seems to fit it. So I'm just going to give you two or three examples. And it'll be over to you. Now, we've done Genesis, so we'll probably leave that there. There's a lot in Genesis, obviously, but we're just touching on issues at the moment. So let's do a few of these early Old Testament books. Because for a person who's trying to learn the Bible, they are pretty rough history, a pretty rough story. Pretty rough territory, and I wouldn't blame anybody to skip over them. Genesis is not too bad, but then you get to Exodus, and of course you have the wonderful story of the people of Israel coming out of Egypt and refugees in the promise in the wilderness. And that's going well until you hit the details of the tabernacle. About 9 chapters of detail after detail after detail. And you say, what on earth has that got to do with anything? It's got to do with a lot of things, but it may not have a lot to do with the modern reader. And so we look at that and we say, why is it there? Well, it's a very important question and it needs to be answered. Basically, it's turning chaos into order. God is with them, among them, doing extraordinary things to Egypt, extraordinary things to them in the wilderness. And he, God, seems to be an untamable force who does extraordinary things and makes extraordinary decisions. And the thing that is happening in Genesis with the tabernacle is that God is establishing a beautiful order of sacred space. In the middle of the wilderness, in the middle of these thousands of people, in the middle of these refugees who are completely at a loss as to what's going to happen next, completely at a loss as to what sort of God they're following and what sort of God Moses has introduced them to, God says, I want you to set up a sacred space. And it'll be a safe space. Unless you get too close to it and then you'll get zapped. This is strange stuff for a modern reader. But it's not strange in its concept. Because if you take it on further very quickly to the New Testament, we are told that we are the temples of the Holy Spirit. So we are sacred space. Very much unlike the tabernacle, but still, as sacred space, we're incredibly complex beings, as it was with the tabernacle. The tabernacle, if you've bothered to read it through closely and slowly and carefully and done some research on it, it is a very detailed portable tent. Sacred space. So the people and God could live in order with each other. Well, that's all right, but then if you keep on reading, you get into Leviticus and now you're in a swamp. Because you're in the midst of blood and gore and death and sacrifice and all manner of things, which again, to us, is completely new and different. And it doesn't seem to associate to us at all. But again, if we keep the theme in mind, we'll be right. From chaos to order. Because Leviticus addresses a number of things. It addresses relationships to start with. It offers a sacrificial system, it's a sacrificial system, but you take any sort of system that makes it possible for good relationships. Now, we have them in our society. We have systems to help us in good relationships. Completely different to this Levitical sacrificial system, but of course it is, because that was 3,000 odd years ago. I don't know. I tried to think of some sort of metaphor or what have you to link that of Leviticus with us of today. And it's a weak illustration, but maybe it's like a person who brings gifts or doing something special for a person who is special to them. And it's also about a cleansing. And it addresses not only relationships, God and people, people and people, it addresses placement. It asks the question, where does all this belong? There's a shared sense of what is appropriate and safe and communal and orderly. It also addresses impurity. And this was a major issue between God and people. What is dirt? Well, dirt, I presume, is something like matter in the wrong place. If you've got dirt on the carpet, it's great in the garden, you can grow stuff in it, but it's not good in house. What are weeds? Weeds are just plants that you don't want right where you're gardening. Plants out of place. That's the whole idea of Leviticus. It is dealing with impurity, or in this case, chaos, to bring it into order so that it is pure, it is accessible, it is right, it is whole, it is proper. Now, every society has its taboos, which is a sort of a social group ban. And Israel had them, and you can go through history, and everyone has them. And that's so that in the society or tribe, the Maoris have them, people know what's tapu and what's not, what's appropriate and what's not. And Leviticus addresses that for a new nation, a new people who are trying to make their way with this extraordinary God. Well, Numbers is the next book, and that's all about numbers, and it's all about censuses, the census of the people who are 20 years old and over, because that means that you are warriors, 20 years old men. We want to know how many warriors there are available when we go into the land and kill everybody. And then at the end, it's about a census of who's going to go where in this new land that we're going to conquer. And then we've just done that, and then Joshua. And with my introduction, I'm pretty well finished. Do you recognize this list? This is always interesting to me. The Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and so on. At least 12 of them are mentioned. And are mentioned over and over again about 12 times in the scriptures. Same group. All right, you could say them in your sleep if you read the scriptures long enough. Sort of got a symmetry to them. Ites everywhere. And why are they mentioned so often? To me, it is this, it's chaos. If you're going to go into the land, you've got these army people already, you know, numbered and ready to go. And armed and so on. Then you got this group, and they represent chaos because they are the baddies in Canaan, and you're going to have to deal with them. And if you don't deal with them, it'll be continual chaos. So to get through the Hivites, Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites, etc., and the Moabites, you're going to have to go through chaos to get to order. And that's what the Bible's all about, in one way or another. Okay, so I've given you a sort of bits and pieces of the early chapters, of the early books, and how they might relate to this theme. Now, come on, who's going to be my minion? Who's going to write up here on the board for me? People who just don't use laptops, so they can actually write. Oh, thanks, Joel. A black pen would be good. Now, I don't want sermons, okay? Just give me examples of through the scriptures, anywhere from Genesis to Revelation, that you see this process of from chaos to order working out. And if you don't give me some, I'll have to give you some more. So just shout it out. Joel here, I probably can't hear. Did you hear that, Joel? I didn't. That's all right. That's all right, as long as it's up there. Great, another one. Who said that? All right, yep. The healing of Jesus or the healings of Jesus? That's all right, Joel, keep going. The fall to the resurrection. Oh, that's a big one. Goodness. Oh, didn't want to miss anything out there, did you? Who said what? Alex? Talk to Joel. I can't hear a word you're saying. Call of the disciples. We only just started, Joe. We might have to go over the other side. Gathering of the disciples, calling of the disciples, all right? Can you see over there? Can you see the board over there? Yeah, okay. I think Kevin's got one over here when you're finished. Good. Get on your knees again, Joel. They're still coming. What was the other one? I can't hear a word. Okay, so we've got a theme going here, but it doesn't impress me very much. I mean, it does. It does, but it doesn't. What about the prodigal son? Well, I have a nod. I have one nod. Can you see chaos to order in the prodigal son? If you can't, you're from... I won't say it. Sorry?
The feeding of the 5,000.
The feeding of the 5,000. Yes. People in need of food, and God provides. Could have got ugly out there in the field if they couldn't get the food they wanted. Jesus stilling the storm. Christine knows that she has to shout. She has to do it all through the house every day. She bought a megaphone and it didn't work, which is very wonderful for me. But I'm sure she won't give in. What about a lot of the parables? What about the Good Samaritan? Chaos. The man's almost dead on the roadside. What happens? Someone comes and brings order. Come on. Come on. Think of the parables. Think of the stories. Think of the examples. This is some good stuff. I guess... we probably don't need to elaborate it any further. It is... yeah, you messed that up. Real messed that up. Yeah, I know. We won't even look at it. You can turn the board around now. So, I want to encourage you, when you read the Bible, you can take any number of themes as I've suggested. But look at it with these eyes and see what you come up with and see what the writer is actually trying to convey to us. Because it's not our interpretation of what the writer is saying. It's what the writer is intending to say all along, which is so important. That's what makes it inspired. Our interpretation is not inspired and it can be a whole lot of junk. So with this idea of chaos to order, run with it as you read your Bible through this week. Say, what does this say to this theme? And if not a particular passage, it might be a wider context. As one person said once, read the Bible in large chunks because otherwise you're going to make mistakes. I conclude with this verse. First Corinthians 15:25. For he must rule until God puts all the Messiah's enemies under his feet. From chaos to order. This is a very striking verse. It shows again how the New Testament is linking in with the ancient Near East society. All the time it does it. I mean, obvious, because they're all neighbours. When I say the ancient Near East, I'm thinking of the Assyrians and the Persians and the Babylonians, and then just out of that, the Egyptians. If you know anything about archaeology and Egyptology and all that, you'll find that on the walls of the palaces of these places, you have an image of a king, and he's got his foot on the neck of his enemies. And that's exactly the image that Paul is using here. It's a very well-known image in the ancient Near East. And that is the final moment. When after all of the warring going on, and they always were at war against each other, the conquest is made. The triumphant king is standing at his throne. The poor loser is thrust to his feet, and he comes off his throne and he puts his foot on his neck. He says, "I have triumphed over you. You have brought chaos. I have brought order." In fact, in the Persian Empire, they talk of chaos as the lie. And that was the example of the Persians, the lie. That's a whole new story. Well, go with it. Think about it. Work on it. And I hope you'll be blessed to see a new way of seeing in the Bible. Now, before Alex jumps up and shuts me down, I have one little notification for you, completely off the grid.